This episode is dedicated in memory of John Kyle Beekler, Larry Cohen, and Joseph Pilato.
Hey, fellow horror fans. This is Troy Escamilla, the director of Party Night and Mrs. Claus, and you are listening to Anthony T's Horror Show. Enjoy.
Welcome to Anthony T's Horror Show. I'm Anthony T. In this edition, I'll be going over the HorrorCon's do's and don'ts since HorrorCon season is already here. I'll also have an interview with Astrida Olza, star of the short film Hang Up. And I'll also talk about the recent passing of John Kyle Beekler. And I'll also have a film recommendation as well. But first, the news. Before I get to Remake Mania and horror convention news, Netflix recently dropped the trailers for Season 2 of The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina and Season 3 of Stranger Things. And I have to say, both of those trailers look very great. If you haven't seen either of those shows on Netflix, I definitely highly recommend you check those shows out, as they're two really good horror shows on the Netflix streaming service. But the trailers really did blow me away, and I'm very excited for the return of The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina and Stranger Things. The second season of The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina hits Netflix April 5th, and Stranger Things Season 3 hits Netflix July 4th. Now let's get to Remake Mania, because the next three stories all have to do with, you guessed it, remakes. Well, we'll start off with the film that always hijacks my show. I'm talking about the Child's Play remake. Apparently, right after episode 16, there was more Child's Play news that I did not get to. And this next piece of news, in my opinion, is totally, totally unexcusable. And the news is that Orion Pictures is looking for an A-list actor to play Chucky. Are you fucking kidding me? The film comes out in late June and you don't have the voice of Chucky lined up yet? They're looking for an A-lister, potentially maybe a kid A-lister to voice Chucky? I don't know. This is just fucking ridiculous. Seriously. The film comes out in 3 months. 3 months before the film is set to come out, and you don't have the voice of Chucky. Hello! How can you test screen a movie and not have the voice of Chucky in it? Sure, you had someone doing the voice of Chucky, as according to the various articles on it. But how can you not have the exact voice of Chucky when you're test screening? I don't get this film. I really don't fucking get this fucking film. This film feels like everything that can go wrong goes wrong. And it's pretty much hijacked my show, pretty much. As it seems like every show I'm talking about this film, when I should be talking about other things. But it's stupid things like they didn't cast Chucky yet that I know I gotta take a couple of minutes in the news to talk about it. Because I don't want to talk about this fucking film. I really don't. But the news keeps getting more and more outrageous. I don't know. I really don't know. Apparently in the test screening, they had somebody else voice the role. continue get a good reading on how the performance of the actor who's going to play Chucky in a test screening when you won't even test the voice. It's like this film has been on a downhill slope since day one, and it's getting to be tiresome now. Seriously. I just want to let you know that the news stories came from Jimmy Champagne and 3C Films over on YouTube. So if you want to know more about it, go there. Because I am about fucking done. Seriously. With this. And this is not the only news that I'm pissed off over Orion Pictures over. As they recently announced that they've already have a script for another remake. It's like they're already ruined Child's Play. Now guess what film they're going to ruin next. I'm talking about Night of the Comet. The one with Kelly Maroney and Catherine Mary Stewart. A very good 80s sci-fi film. According to Dread Central, that the script for the remake of Night of the Comet is completed. Why the fuck am I gonna trust Orion Pictures to remake another film after the way they fucking handled Child's Play? Really? I'll tell you right now, I'll be surprised if I'm even interested in the upcoming remake of Night of the Comet. Because they apparently have fucked everything up with Child's Play, as you can hear on various episodes of Anthony T's Horror Show, because I'm still talking about that fucking piece of shit, even though the film hasn't come out yet, and I still haven't seen the final trailer for Child's Play, and that's gonna be a fucking piece of shit too, probably. So why should I be very negative about this remake of Night of the Comet? Because I can't trust Orion Pictures to make a film right now. Flat out and simple. If they can't cast a film when it gets to the test screening process, how can you even trust them with anything at this point? Seriously. As I'm going into this Night of the Comet remake after hearing about it for the first time is, they're probably going to rush that one too, like they did with Child's Play. Seriously. Why is Orion Pictures doing this? Seriously. I read an open letter recently. And I will share that open letter next episode. Because I'm done talking Orion Pictures this episode. Because that company is just so stupid. First they screw Anna and the Apocalypse with a limited theatrical release. And now we're getting the Child's Play remake, which that's been a complete mess from the get-go. And now they're going to remake Night of the Comet. A very good 80s sci-fi film that doesn't need to be remade. I don't get you, Orion Pictures. I really don't. I don't know which is the worst studio right now. Orion Pictures or The Asylum. Seriously. And don't get me started with The Asylum. And in other remake news, and yes, there's a third remake coming, as Legendary Pictures recently announced that actor Malcolm Blair, who's appeared in films such as Blue Ruin and Green Room, he's also directed a film for Netflix called I Don't Feel at Home in This World Anymore, will be directing the remake of The Toxic Avenger. Now, this is a project that's been, like, seemingly going on and on and on. It's one of those projects where I'll believe it when I see it. They've been talking about it for, like, years and nothing's happened. So, again, this is more speculation of the Toxic Avenger being remade. I don't know why I feel about this one, too, because I'm not familiar with the director. Maybe that's a good thing. But I trust Lloyd Kaufman and Michael Hurst that they're not handing the Toxic Avenger over to just be ruined like every other classic horror film, i.e. Child's Play. As the last time they did that for Mother's Day, that turned out to be a very good film. So, fingers crossed, this is actually good. But I believe that this film is happening when production starts. As this has been going on for like a couple of years now, so. In convention news, Rock and Shock made a major announcement. And I mean major announcement. They teased that, oh, it's going to be big. Unlike the last couple of years. And I have to say, they delivered. Because guess who's coming to Rock and Shock to headline that convention? It's none other than the man, the myth, the legend, Bruce Campbell. Yes, Bruce fucking Campbell. The guy from the Evil Dead films in Ash vs. Evil Dead. The convention takes place October 11th through the 13th in Worcester, Massachusetts at the DCU Center. This was a surprising announcement, as they usually don't announce things early, but I have to say, this is probably one of their biggest announcements they made in the history of that convention. So I cannot wait for Rock and Shock this year. And finally, more guests were announced for the upcoming ScareCon New England convention that takes place June 7th through the 9th in Framingham, Massachusetts at the Sheraton Framingham Hotel and Conference Center. The new batch of guests includes Terry Kaiser from Weekend in Bernie's in Friday the 13th, Part 7. The New Blood, Kate Hodge from Leatherface, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3, and Danielle Bisuti from Curse of Chucky, Insidious Chapter 2, and Insidious The Last Key. This is already shaping up to be a very good convention. I cannot wait to be there June 7th through the 9th in Framingham, Massachusetts. As it's going to be a fun convention. As ScareCon New England is usually one of the best conventions I go to every year. And I can't wait to be there June 7th through the 9th. With that, that's the news. Besides Anthony T's horror show, you can also listen to these other fine podcasts on the Doc Discussions Network. Doc Discussions, hosted by Phil Perrone and Michael Darwin. You Know Nothing, Jon Snow, a Game of Thrones podcast. Bullets, Brothels, and Bots, a Westworld podcast. Halloween Boutique, Psychotronic Reviews. And Searching for American Gods. You can find Doc Discussions on the web at www.docdiscussions.com. And Doc Discussions is also available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Welcome back to Anthony T's Horror Show. Now, with convention season already started, I figured this would be a good time to talk about the do's and don'ts of horror conventions. Now, the first thing that you should do, and this is a very important one, is bring money. Because celebrities will charge for their autograph and their pictures. Don't think they're going to give an autograph or a picture away for free, because they're not going to do that. If you're thinking that way, then you're going to be very disappointed when you get to the convention and you find out, oh, I don't have any money and this person's charging and I can't afford it. Or why is this person charging? Even though she was brought in as a guest. Well, celebs need to make money. And one of the ways they do it is by charging for autographs and pictures, so don't expect any free autographs or pictures. You may get a rare case where someone will give free autographs or someone will give free pictures, because I've seen one or two celebs do that over the years that I've been going to conventions. But 97-98% of the celebrities that do the conventions usually charge for both an autograph and a picture, so make sure you bring money. And also, it's a good idea to have money, too, if you want to buy stuff that some of the vendors are selling, like films, or t-shirts, or comics, or books, or other stuff. So, it's very important to bring money to conventions, because it's important. And yes, some vendors will take credit cards, but celebrities usually don't take credit cards, so always bring money when you're going to a convention, especially if you want an autograph and or picture. Make sure you have good hygiene. It's very simple. All these celebs are around people all day, and they don't want to smell your bad odor and that crap. So it's always good to make sure you're clean, brush your teeth, and whatnot. Be courteous to everyone at the facility, including attendees that attend the convention, the guests there, and especially the hotel or convention staff. Because nobody wants to deal with someone who's angry, as this is supposed to be a fun time. It's not a time where you just get angry or just really frustrated. Conventions are fun, so it's always good to keep a kind and courteous attitude. Who knows? You may even make some friends at conventions as well. Make sure you always ask for permission when you're taking pictures with cosplayers or taking pictures of cosplayers. You don't want to be that guy who's a creep by taking pictures without their permission. I find that disgusting and unethical. So always ask the cosplayer that you want to take his or her picture, either of the person or you with the person, because it's being polite, and you also want to make the person that you're taking a picture of comfortable with you as well. So always ask permission every time you take a picture of a cosplayer, because it's the right thing to do. Make sure you tip your bartender if you're planning on drinking. I know a lot of conventions will have parties in which some of the bar staff will be there serving drinks. Please make sure that you tip your bartender, as these people are probably not making a lot of money doing this job, so they can use whatever extra money they can get. And finally, speaking of drinking, always drink responsibly. You don't want to be that guy who is incoherent and drunk, because you don't want to be that guy waking up the next morning having a wicked hangover, and then you have to be on the convention floor. It would not be good for you. Plus, it would probably kill some of the fun that you're having at the convention, because you're so tired and just so out of it. So, drink responsibly, because it's not cool to be drunk at a convention. And plus, once you get a hangover, you're not really into the convention, as you're struggling from the day before. So please drink responsibly when you're at a convention. Now, here are some of the don'ts. And I stress this enough, don't. The first don't is, don't take photos of celebrities at their tables or anywhere on the hotel premises. It's kind of creepy, first of all. Plus, you're taking money out of their pocket, because if you're taking a picture of the celebrity, then why bother pay for a picture? And when I say on the premises, like in a hotel or on the convention lobby, those people have a right to privacy as well. So don't bug them when they're anywhere on the hotel. Unless it was at a party or something, and they want to talk to you, then that's different. But don't bother them if they want privacy or trying to steal photos, because that's not cool. Don't take pictures of artists' work. Seriously. By taking a picture of an artist's piece of work, technically, it feels like stealing, and you're taking money away from their pockets in which they work their hardest to create some of their art. It's not cool. Seriously. These people are struggling artists as is. If you like something, then buy it. Don't take a picture on your phone, then walk away, because that's disgusting, seriously. People work so hard to create various pieces of art that when you take a picture, it kind of feels like stealing, in all honesty. So, always purchase the artwork of artists. Don't use your phone. I find it very, very despicable that you're taking away money from the artist. Pay the artist, because it makes them happy, it makes them want to create more art, and it makes you happy because you get to hang it up on your wall. So always pay for any artwork. Don't act like a jerk. I've already kind of explained that when I said be courteous to everyone, but I figured I'd remind you anyway, because nobody likes a jerk, and a horror convention is supposed to be a fun time, not a place where you get angry at somebody. So please don't act like a jerk. This next one is very important, because I was at Monster Mania 39, and the fire marshal came and shut down the convention because it was overcrowded. One of the main reasons why it was overcrowded, you had people sneaking into the convention. So don't sneak into the convention. And I'll tell you why. First, the promoter has to pay for the space that he uses at the hotel or convention, which includes conference rooms, main ballrooms, main halls. That stuff ain't free. And when a convention charges for admission, that's what the admission is going towards. Renting all these rooms and all these halls so that they can bring the celebs in for you to see. I don't want to see people sneaking into conventions, because by sneaking into a convention, you are ripping off the promoter. And that is completely wrong. If a promoter can't make money on the convention, then you can forget about having the convention for future years, because they need to pay for the space they're going to use. And most of that money comes from the tickets that they sell. So don't sneak into conventions, because you're ripping off the promoter, and you can end up having the convention go out of business because it can't make money. So pay to go to the convention. Enough said. Seriously. I should not have to say this, but there are some people that try to sneak into these hotel conventions. So, don't. sneak into a convention, just pay for a ticket or a wristband. So you're helping the promoter pay for the space that he is renting. Don't sticker the hotel or convention floor. I know I should not say that, but sometimes somebody might get an idea to, you know what, put stickers on the wall or on chairs or put a sticker on a piece of furniture in your room. Don't sticker the hotel or convention hall because it makes the promoter look bad and they won't be invited back to host the convention at that venue. So don't sticker the hotel or convention hall. In fact, don't destroy any property as well. So that should be simple. The next one is one of my pet peeves. Don't sit on the floor, period. Sometimes I see people sitting on the floor at conventions when there's a lot of traffic. Don't sit on the floor, because by sitting on the floor, the chances for an accident go up, and we want nobody hurt at these conventions. If you're in a panel room and there's no seats in this room, stand. Don't sit on the floor in the center of the room because you're asking for something to happen. So don't sit on the floor because it's not right to be sitting on the floor in the first place. If you want to sit badly, go to a film room because most of the time the film rooms are empty. So that's a perfect place to where you can sit. There's also maybe some seats in the lounge area or hotel restaurant or designated areas in a convention center where you can sit. But there is no need to sit on the floor because you're just asking for something bad to happen to you. I'm just doing this as a public safety announcement, so don't sit on the floor at a convention. You don't want to get hit accidentally, so don't sit on the floor. Now, this one I have to mention because it happened a couple years ago at a convention where some knucklehead stole something. So I have to bring this up. Don't steal from the vendors. These guys travel probably hundreds of miles to be at a convention, so don't steal from them. They're a small business. They're just trying to make money. I find it disgusting when people just steal stuff, period. But it's worse when you're stealing from a small business, as a lot of these vendors are just small businesses in general. So don't steal from them. Pay for your stuff. If you can't afford it, you can't afford it. But don't steal. It makes you look bad. Plus, eventually, they'll get you because this camera's everywhere. So don't steal. Support your indie retailers and pay for your stuff. And finally, don't trash your room like a rock star. I say this because if you're a congoer and you trash your room, it looks bad on the convention. So don't trash your room, because on top of the damage you have to pay, you also make the convention look bad. So don't trash your room. Just be kind and tip your maid at the end of your stay. And that's all I've got for my horror cons do's and don'ts. Please take this all into consideration before you go to a horror convention or Comic Con this year. As conventions are supposed to be fun and drama free. So I hope you enjoy whatever convention you're going to, and help support these vendors and celebrities who need the money to help make a living. And always remember, when you're going to a convention, have a good time. Have a podcast that you want to promote? Well, if you're interested in swapping commercials, you can promote your show here on Anthony T's Horror Show. And in return, I will promote your commercial on my show as well. For more information, contact me at AnthonyT'sHorrorShow@gmail.com.
Hey guys, this is Steven Christina. I'm the founder, owner, creator, and host of Super Retro Throwback Reviews. Are you looking for the best movie reviews, music reviews, video game reviews, and Comic-Con coverage all around? Well, then look no further. Definitely check out Super Retro Throwback Reviews on YouTube and our new audio podcast, the new and improved Super Retro Throwback Reviews Audio Files version 2.0 on the following media distributors: Podbean, Google Play, Stitcher, SoundCloud, iTunes, and Spotify.
Class is over, John. Time for something new and improved.
Welcome back to Anthony T's Horror Show. I'm now here with actress Estrida Oza. She's an actress that currently can be seen in Richard Powell's latest short film, Hang Up. Welcome to the show, Estrida. How are you doing today?
Oh, hi. I'm doing fine. Thank you very much, Anthony.
Now, what made you get into acting?
What made me get into acting? I think I'm just a film lover. I love fantasy. I just want to be part of that world where you work with other people together to create something that can sometimes influence people, create a dream. And I think that's very exciting.
Now, I know you have a lot of horror films on your IMDb page. Were you a fan of horror going into acting?
I'm sorry, was I what?
A fan of horror.
A fan of horror, yes. I do like horror. I'm kind of picky in the horrors that I like, because I think there's very different types of horror fans. My favorite type of horror movies are psychological suspense, the ones that I really like. I know there's people who like the blood and gore horror movies. There's a different categories of horror movies. Those are the ones that I like, that are kind of slow and they build, and you know, the acting is good, and then you trying to figure out what it is, and they surprise you in the end. You know, I don't want to see it coming. Mm-hmm. Or it's like, I don't want those where you say, "Don't go in the basement."
Now, I noticed most of your films were shot in Canada. What does the film seem like in Canada?
You know, I've heard, I didn't know this when I was doing the horror films in Toronto, but I've heard that Toronto is quite the hub for horror films, and apparently they have a very good reputation for making them. And the filmmakers in Toronto, there's an indie community, and a lot of them know each other, you know, because it turns out to be a small world. I think, you know, in any business that you do, you get to know everybody. And I think there's a lot of great talent sparking up in Toronto and the outskirts as well. Not just Toronto, but Kitchener, Ottawa. I've actually am based in Montreal, which is about 600 kilometers away from Toronto. And because Montreal is mostly a French-speaking city now, for me to do roles in films, I often travel. I have a saying that I say to myself, half suitcase will travel. And so when I do auditions, they're very often I do them by video audition. Sometimes I might go in person, as I did for the Fatal Pictures for the film Familiar. And yeah, so I find Toronto is quite the hub for horror films. And that's unusual. What I do is to travel from Montreal all the way to Toronto to do that.
Now tell me about your latest short film, Hang Up, which is the latest film from director Richard Powell.
Okay. That is a very unusual type of film. When I saw the script, I thought, oh, wow, it's fantastic for an actress because it's got variations, you know. It just goes all over the place. It starts here, and then it goes somewhere you're not expecting, and then it changes again. And I thought, wow, what a fantastic challenge. You know, she gets to go through this kind of emotion, and then she goes through this, and she goes through that. And what a type of person to play, you know. The first thing I would say is, gee, I'm not like that person, but you have to find something that you can relate to, right? And so instead of relating to her on a whole and saying, well, what is it in me that's bad, instead I look at, like the pieces of what she is. Like, I'll look at, well, I felt bitterness, and I felt anger, and I felt jealousy, which I tell myself maybe that's what's her hang-up with her daughter, you know? And maybe her hang-up with her husband is, I've been bored with some, you know, boyfriends after a while, right? So, you know, so I found pockets of her that I could relate to and just use the in-the-moment emotion of what she was going through.
Now, how did you become a part of this film?
I had worked previously with the Fatal Group people, in the short film Familiar, and I had been a fan of theirs before I got to work in that film. I'd seen their movie Worm, which I loved. I just thought it was, you know, just fantastic. And I thought the quality of their films was great, you know, the cinematography, the acting, the writing. And so I really, you know, worked hard to get into that film Familiar, and was a great experience working with them. And then I heard that they had this film Hang Up coming, and I made an audition tape sent, and the character that I had was, the voice was a bit subdued in the audition, but when we went to rehearsals for the character, Richard decided then, he's the director, Richard Powell, he wanted it a bit more, to put more character in it, to not keep it subdued. Then he thought, you know, it just needs more oomph.
Now, what was Richard Powell like as a director?
Well, I know a lot of people say when they're talking about a movie how great their director is and the writer, but Richard Powell is the writer, so he understands his material very well. And, you know, I think he's a fantastic writer. And so I really mean it when it's just a joy to work with Richard Powell. He is right up there, I think, right at the top. And I've even had someone tell me that he thinks he's a genius. His writing is always so, I can just so easy to act with, so much there. So much meat that you can work with. And as a director, he never pegs you into something. You know, he works together with you, and he knows what he wants, but he doesn't lock into it. And then when you work with him and he sees what it is, then he'll say, that's it. You know, and so you're working together where you want to go. And that's kind of, I think, an actor's ideal. Sorry.
No problem. Now, you also got to work with Robert Nolan, even though you probably didn't work with them on this film on screen. What was he like to work on Familiar?
Familiar, there wasn't a lot of words for my character, but she goes through different things. So when I was doing the auditions for Familiar, I played her a certain way, which was maybe too sweet and vulnerable than they wanted. And then when I understood what they wanted, I thought, you know what, I'm just going to come down to Toronto and actually do the audition in person. And so when I did, the way we auditioned for that, because there wasn't enough dialogue for my character, is we improv. We did a long improv, and that was a lot of fun as the characters. And, you know, that's when I got the part after that. And Robert Nolan, your question was, what was he like in Familiar?
No, what was it like to work with him?
Yeah, to work with him. He's got, I would say, boundless energy, because, you know, when you're making a film, you can go for many, many hours. And he was the lead character. Like, I would say 95% of the film was him. And he was just amazing. Like, from morning to night, he was just there all the time with this boundless energy. And I was hanging around watching everything. So it was very fascinating to me, especially it was filmed in 4 days. And the last, remember the last day, you know, of course, that as often happens, then you're sometimes going over. And he's still, and he had to play the very difficult role, you know, where at the end it becomes very dramatic. And, yeah, it was just very interesting watching how he worked. And then also, when I want to rehearse something, like some people don't like to rehearse and some people do in films, well, I do. And so he never said no, you know, to rehearsals, which helped me get into the character.
What were your thoughts when you read the script and found out that your role was going to be the only voice that people hear in the film?
Well, it was fascinating because I never saw a script like that. So I thought, this is incredible. It's just quite a challenge because there was so much dialogue. And I knew I needed to understand the script as well as Richard Powell, who wrote it. So, you know, I just read it and read it and got into it with him over and over. So, yeah, I thought it was very exciting to have something so original, you know, because the more we go in time, the more it gets harder to come up with original ideas all the time. And I just loved it. The idea that one character just talks all the time, and yet you have another character who doesn't talk at all, and you just see them visually, and that it's going to be filmed in black and white. Yeah, I was very very excited to have a chance to get into something unusual like that.
That's why I think what made this very good, too. Because usually when you see Robert Nolan in a Richard Powell film, he's usually the center of attention. This time he pretty much takes a back seat, and you're the center of attention.
Right, in a very now, different way, yeah.
How was your performance recorded?
Okay, so I rehearsed actually with on the telephone because I'm in Montreal and Richard is in Ontario, Toronto, and so night after night I would rehearse with Richard on the phone, and he'd give me new notes every night, and we'd just go to new places, and he'd had new ideas for me. So then I came down to Toronto to record it, and Richard and Zach, the producer, were there, and they were sitting there watching me. It was a cozy studio. It kind of looked like a little room. It was very cozy. And they both said to me, "If you want to speed up, we'll turn our backs if it makes you feel better." You know, and I said, "That's okay." So they were willing to be very accommodating with me, and Richard was right there always with the notes. And I did it in, you know, it's a very long monologue, and I did it in about the basic part of it. I did in 3 takes, nonstop, from beginning to end. And then after that, Richard chose the parts that he wanted to redo and or work on more out of that, and like, let's say, a paragraph. So then we did those separately after.
Now, how long did it take for you to complete your work on this film?
You mean in the voice studio?
Yes.
I think it might have been something like 2.5 hours.
So that's pretty much quick, which is good.
Well, we were prepared. We prepared beforehand. That's why we had the rehearsals over the telephone, because Richard always goes in very prepared. And so that way we would be very ready, you know, for what we had to do.
Now, what were your thoughts when you read this script?
Huh. I guess I had a lot of thoughts. I'm I guess I'm a little bit outdated as a person, and there was some words that I had to have explained to me. I didn't even know what butt dial was. And so for me, the beginning was, okay, I want to understand every phrase and every word that I don't get in the script. Like andrology, that's apparently a male fertility clinic. And so I got that down. And then the next step was just to understand everything and try to come up with, this is a very unusual person. So what? It's hard to justify her. So I have to come up with what justifies her, like that I believe in. And like I said, what helped me was to make it into beats of emotions that I can relate to that she was feeling. So something in her life obviously made her like this. And it would be whatever caused these emotions that she went through. And to myself, I say perhaps, you know, she might have been somebody who was abused when she was younger and she didn't know what love is. And maybe she has a jealousy towards her daughter, and maybe she resents her husband because, you know, maybe she doesn't love him and she feels that when he touches her, you know, it's just beyond what she's put up with, even though the husband thinks he's a good man. I think there's a lot of undercurrent and underlying things that maybe we don't know about that made her this this extreme.
Now, what was it like doing the performance in the studio compared to doing the performance on set?
Do you mean the voice studio as compared to Familiar, where they were
working on an actual studio set?
Well, it was a we had a studio for the voice recording.
I mean film set. Sorry about that.
Okay, so film set would be more like where we did Familiar, where we were on a set. Yeah, it's very different. But then, you know, I can say that every short film is very different because the sets can really vary. You know, it can be outdoors with the planes flying over, or indoors with a crowd of people that walk in that you're not expecting. So, you know, always expect the unexpected. So the I have done some voice recordings before, like, and there's many variety of ways to do it. So, you know, I've done some animation voices when I really love it, doing that. And on set, you know, you do a lot of waiting. My character in Familiar just had small parts, but then I got to see how they did everything else and get in, soak up the atmosphere of what's going on for the other character, and give me time to prepare for mine in between. And yeah, it's more hustle and bustle, actually. The on set, there's the crew, and so you're much more busy there, whereas it's more intimate, I would say, on when you're recording your voice.
Now, what were your final thoughts when you first saw the final product?
Yeah, it's always suspenseful to see the final product. And, you know, you have to wait months later to get to see it. So I guess, you know, sometimes you get insecure about your performance and, oh, what's it going to, you know, what's it going to be? But when I saw it, I was really happy. How it came together, that was a wonderful original short film that came together again. And I just think Fatal Picture seems to always deliver something that is always fascinating and something for people to talk about.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you on that, because they usually do a good job with their short films. I really wish Richard Powell would make a feature film.
Yeah, wouldn't that be wonderful? I mean, he's from what I know, he's written a few features. So I think it's just a matter of finding a way to make them. And I just think he's super talented. And him and Zach are just a fantastic team. And I would love to see that. I think if anybody should make a feature, it's Fatal Pictures. Because they're very original. I'm sorry. I just saw some films on Netflix, like Hereditary and something called Elizabeth's Harvest. Maybe you should see it. It's very original. And, yeah, like when I see these films, I think Fatal Pictures can do that. They're along the same vein. They're, you know, they're original. And they're deep into character, and the writing's great.
Now, were you surprised that Richard Pyle made this film a black and white film instead of traditional color, which is custom with any film these days?
I was happily surprised, you know, when I heard that. I thought, wonderful, wonderful, you know. You know, Richard is thinking again. He's always thinking of aesthetically to come up with something. I think it suited the film as well.
Yes, agreed. Mm-hmm. Because this film is just downright disturbing from start to finish.
It gives you something to think about. Because I think we all have this light in the back of our mind, paranoia, like when we talk to someone. Somebody's not hearing this, right? You know, sometimes we don't have the best of thoughts, all of us. And, you know, you don't want to ever think you might be recorded. I even myself got a butt dial once. I was... my family and friends went out to a restaurant where they didn't ask me to come along. And then next thing I know, I get a butt dial and I can all hear them talking. And it sounds like they're in an aquarium, you know, it's like bubbles or whatever, but they're there. And then when I told them after, you know, I heard you, they didn't believe me, but you know, so it can really happen.
Now, what are some of your upcoming films that people should keep an eye out for?
Well, I have a small role in a feature film called Life Changer that was filmed in Canada, and that's doing really well. It's accomplished something amazing on Rotten Tomatoes, which is a 94% critics score and a 94% audience score. And
yeah, I think I've heard about that one, actually.
Mm-hmm. It's
interesting.
Yes, it's where, you know, someone can take over the body of somebody else, like body shifting, which I love the concept of that idea. And it's thrown in a romance as well. So it's not just a horror. There's a little bit of, you know, like a human story to it, which is, you know, I think one of the reasons why it's doing so well. And also, yes.
Oh, no. Continue.
Well, I'm just trying to think of, I did a few other shorts. They just played at the Blood in the Snow Festival, A Final Ride, which is a feature done by Mike McCurran. He's done a 3-short film anthology, and I'm in one called The Tattoo Artist, where I play the tattoo artist, which was a really fun role. When I read the script, I thought, oh my God, I have to play that character. It's a small role, but it was just so much fun. Another one called Scarlet Vampires, filmed in Ottawa. I was nominated for a Best Actress at the Austin Revolution Film Festival for that one. It's a bit of a dual role. Maybe that's why I play the matriarch of a cult with a taste for something that's scarlet, of course. And, you know, then it goes into darkness after, where the characters, you know, get into their dark clothes and things get rather...
violent.
Nasty. Yeah. And I...
Now, do you... Oh, you still...
Go ahead.
I was going to end. Do you have any social media platforms in which people can follow you at?
I guess I'm still old-fashioned. I've just got the Facebook going at the moment.
Yeah, it took me a while to get into Facebook. I didn't get into like my late 20s. So you're not alone.
Yeah, well, I'm the older generation, you know, and I guess we're kind of stuck in the certain area. You know, I find it's not that easy when you're, you know, I work, and so you have to work, and then you're doing the indie stuff on the side, you know, to keep up with everything.
Well, it was very nice having you on my show, Astrid.
Oh, thank you very much. And I really enjoyed talking to you about this, actually.
Thank you.
A subject that I really enjoy, and you've made it very pleasant, so I thank you for that.
You're welcome. Thank you for coming on my show, and have a good day.
Okay, same to you, Anthony.
Want to learn more about horror directors? With a lighthearted look at three of their movies? Meet fearless podcaster Gore Blimey.
I've been unsettled by bats in the past and startled by parrots, and I've even been known to jump at the odd cockatoo.
Discover horror films that are classics, and others, too.
There's a topless aerobics massacre, an exploding rock singer, cannibals, nude martial arts, a deep-fried...
But it's not all silliness. You'll get proper movie breakdowns, opinion, and background information, too.
Yep, in the 80s and 90s, Jeff Stryker was huge in gay porn. In every sense.
So if you're a horror film fan, come and check out the Trilogy of Terror podcast at strangeanddeadly.com or find it on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or on your podcatcher.
One of those people that has a certain charisma and a certain style, and I'm just hoping one day he'll rub off on me.
The Trilogy of Terror podcast, where we try three times harder to give you the willies.
Welcome back to Anthony T's Horror Show. Recently, between episodes, we lost three people in the horror film community. We lost special effects artist John Kyle Buechler, producer, writer, director Larry Cohen, and actor Joseph Pilito. Let me first start off with John Kyle Buechler. He was a special effects artist who has worked on such films as Hatchet, Howling for the Return of Michael Myers, A Nightmare on Elm Street 4, The Dream Master, Friday the 13th Part 7, The New Blood, which he also directed. He's mostly known for those films, plus a lot of work in the Empire Films days. He worked on various Empire films, including Trancers, Terror Vision, From Beyond, Dolls, Ghoulies, Ghoulies 2, and a bunch of other Empire Picture films. So he was pretty much a staple in the heyday of Empire Pictures. But he's most known for his effects work on films such as A Nightmare on Elm Street 4, The Dream Master, Friday the 13th, Part 7, A New Blood, and also Hatchet, which is one of his greatest works, in my opinion. Besides his legendary special effects work, he also directed a bunch of films, including Friday the 13th, Part 7, A New Blood, which I mentioned earlier. He also directed the cult classic Troll, Watchers 4, and Ghoulies Go to College. Besides that, he did a little acting, nothing major, but probably his most notable acting performance is in the Hatchet films as Jack Cracker. Pretty much one of the most notable characters from the first two Hatchet films. As you have to see it, because trust me, that character stands out. But if I have to say what are some of his greatest special effects work, I would have to say Bride of Reanimator, From Beyond. That's another really good effects work that he did, especially towards the end of the film, as that is really a great piece of special effects work at the climactic ending of the film, which really helps make this film a classic, in my opinion. But my favorite special effects work of his was Hatchet, because the way he did the effects for all the kill scenes in the film, it had a really over-the-top gory feel to it, which really helped make Victor Crowley what he is today, as the effects from that film really stand out. It's definitely worth checking out for the effects alone. It's really sad that he passed away at the age of 66. John Buechler is a talent that will definitely be missed in the horror world. Now, if you want to help John Buechler's family in any way, the family set up a GoFundMe page as they need to pay medical bills and his funeral. You can visit the GoFundMe page and donate at www.gofundme.com/help-john-beekler. John Cal Beekler is definitely a talented special effects artist that will truly be missed. We also got some sad news that writer, director, producer Larry Cohen passed away at the age of 77. He directed films such as the It's Alive trilogy, A Return to Salem Lot, Q, and The Stuff, which is his most notable directed film. Larry Cohen was also a writer and producer as well. But for me, I was mostly tuned into Larry Cohen's work through his screenwriting, as he did a very good series called Maniac Cop back in the late 80s, early 90s. It spawned 3 films out of that series. The series did a really great job blending action and horror together into this one kick-ass series, which I really highly suggest you check out if you're a fan of these action horror films. But my favorite Larry Cohen film would have to be the film they written the screenplay for. Came out in 2002 called Phone Booth. This is a very gripping thriller with a unique premise to it, since pretty much the whole film takes place in one phone booth. But Larry Cohen's screenplay in that film is great, because I was literally on the edge of my seat for that film the entire time. It also helped that the performances were also very good too, as this was one of Larry Cohen's few major studio films that he written. The film was directed by Joel Schumacher and starred Colin Farrell, Kiefer Sutherland, and Forest Whitaker. I would definitely recommend you check out Phone Booth if you're checking out films like The Stuff, Chew. Definitely check out some of his screenplay work as well, as he's done some good screenplays for the Maniac Cop trilogy, which I enjoyed a lot, and Phone Booth, which I really think is a very underrated film, as it is very suspenseful from the get-go and doesn't let up until the final credits. Larry Cohen is a very talented screenwriter who knew how to create good action scenes and keep you on the edge of your seat. There's also a documentary on his life called King Cohen, which is available on Shudder. I haven't seen it yet, but I'm definitely going to check this out just to get a general idea of the man, because the only things I know Larry Cohen from the Maniac Cop series and Phone Booth. But his screenplays for those films are good, especially Phone Booth. Definitely try to rent that film out, as it is an intense thriller. Sadly, Larry Cohen passed away at the age of 77. He was a talented screenwriter that delivered on action and suspense. We also lost actor Joseph Pilato, who is most notably known for Captain Rhodes and George Romero's Day of the Dead. I really think Pilato's character is probably one of the most notable characters out of George Romero's whole Living Dead saga. It's definitely a very good performance too from him, which I think makes his character Captain Rhodes stand out from most of the characters in the Living Dead saga. He passed away at the age of 70. Now at this time, I wanted to offer my condolences to the friends and family of John Carl Beekler, Larry Cohen, and Joseph Pilato. You can find Anthony T's Horror Show on social media on these platforms: Facebook at facebook.com/AnthonyT's Horror Show, Twitter at www.twitter.com/AnthonyT's Horror, on Instagram at www.instagram.com/AnthonyT's Horror Show, on YouTube at www.youtube.com/AnthonyThurber, and you can find Anthony T's Horror Show on the web as well at anthonytshorrorshow.blogspot.com, and you can also find Doc Discussions at www.docdiscussions.com. For my film recommendation this episode, it's a film that I've been waiting for pretty much a long time for to come out on Blu-ray, and I thought I never would see it come out on Blu-ray, and it just was released in time that Disney took over Fox, because this film is a 20th Century Fox film, and once the Disney-Fox merger happened, this film would have probably been lost forever. But thankfully, Fox came to a deal with Scream Factory right before the Disney merger. So we have this film on Blu-ray for the first time. I'm talking about the film Warning Sign. It's a sci-fi horror film that really has an all-star cast, including Sam Waterston from Law and Order, Kathleen Quinlan from Twilight Zone the movie, Yepet Kodo from Alien and Freddy's Dead the Final Nightmare, Jeffrey DeMunn from The Mist in the first couple seasons of The Walking Dead, G.W. Bailey from the Police Academy films and The Closer, and the late Richard Dreistadt from L.A. Law and The Thing. This film is a very good film. It's one of those films that I saw when I was growing up on television, when they actually played movies on television of this nature. But what makes this film very good is the performances in the film from Sam Waterston, Kathleen Quinlan, and Jeffrey DeMunn, as those performances really kept my interest in this film. It also has a good amount of action and suspense. It was more of a slow burn thriller type sci-fi film, but this is a very good film. It also has good direction from director Hal Barwood and really good cinematography from Dean Cunley, who you know from Halloween, The Thing, Jurassic Park, and many films. I'm very happy this film is on Blu-ray finally, and really thankful that Scream Factory was able to get this film right before the Fox-Disney merger. As if they tried to get this film after the Fox-Disney merger, I really believe this would be lost, but thankfully Scream Factory did a good job for once and got this film onto Blu-ray right as the finishing touches of the Disney-Fox merger, as 20th Century Fox owned the rights to Warning Sign. I definitely recommend you check out Warning Sign, as it has very good lead performances, good direction, and also very good cinematography. Warning Signs is my film recommendation for this episode. Now, you may notice in my new social media commercial that I played right before the film recommendation that you can visit Anthony T's Horror Show on the web now. Well, you can visit Anthony T's Horror Show on the web now, as I've decided to fold Anthony T's Horror Chamber and turn it into Anthony T's Horror Show's official website. The reason for that is there's just too much confusion between the two sites. So I figured I'd bring everything towards Anthony T's horror show to make it easier for everybody to find my show. You can visit the official website, as it's still a work in progress. So I'm still trying to add episodes and other videos to it. But I'm going to be caught up with this episode here. So don't worry. If I haven't caught up to this episode yet, it will be up on the website soon. You can visit the website at anthonytshorrorshow.blogspot.com, as I'll have news, reviews, and everything else eventually once everything's taken care of with the videos and everything. So you will have a spot for everything that is Anthony T's Horror Show. Don't forget to check the website out. Don't forget to subscribe to Anthony T's Horror Show on YouTube at www.youtube.com/AnthonyThurber. Anthony T's Horror Show on Twitter at Anthony T's Horror. And Anthony T's Horror Show on Facebook and Instagram at Anthony T's Horror Show. Well, this wraps up another episode of Anthony T's Horror Show. Have a good day and support indie horror.